Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today we have a special edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast because we're going to focus on something that is near and dear to my heart. I am an inveterate exerciser, and I live next to a YMCA in New York City. It's the Vanderbilt Y. And I'm also a board member of the Vanderbilt Y because I believe that the YMCA is a wonderful vehicle for promoting health and leadership and positive values among youth and adults throughout the country. And so I'm imbued with a spirit of how the Y works to help build strong bodies and strong minds. And today we're going to talk to an expert on a program, a very innovative program, that the YMCA is spearheading. He is Dr. Matt Longjohn. He is a medical doctor. He also holds a degree in public health. He's senior director of chronic disease prevention at the YMCA, where he leads the development and dissemination of innovative programs and initiatives in the area of chronic disease prevention. So if you used to think that the YMCA was just a place where, you know, you could bang around with some weights, maybe run around an indoor track or jump in a pool, there's more to the Y than just a place where people work out. It's also a place which is spearheading an initiative to turn around America's very serious epidemics of degenerative diseases that may be related to poor diet and lack of exercise. Matt's background is that he studied pediatrics at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, and he's worked with a variety of organizations, including the Chicago Public Schools, the Michigan Department of Community Health, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And now he's working on behalf of the YMCA. So welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, Matt. It's nice having you aboard. Good to tell
Thanks
us a little
having
bit.
Me.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your initiative.
So, at YMCA of the USA, it's the national resource center for all the Ys around the country. We've been thinking long and hard for nearly a decade about how to reformulate and reorganize the YMCAs and the program offerings and the initiatives that Ys run around the country, basically to address those chronic disease epidemics that you were talking about. And the YMCA's Diabetes Prevention Program is one of those efforts. It is a signature program of the national organization, the YMCA of the USA, and we've been working to really test and develop this program now for several years and bring it to scale into communities such as New York City, but now in 104 cities around the country. And we hope to do exactly what you said, which is help people who are at risk for diabetes reverse their risks, reduce their risks, live healthier lives, and avoid all the complications that comes along with really an irreversible diagnosis of diabetes.
Well, let's go back to basics. Let's trace a little bit the mission of the YMCA. The YMCA started, I guess, in the 1800s, and it was like the Young Men's Christian Association, and the idea was to build, in mens sana, corpora sana, strong minds and healthy bodies, and to build character. And how do we see this now as an extension of the Y's mission?
Well, you're absolutely right. The Y is approaching 170 years of age here in the U.S. There aren't that many organizations that are that old, but yeah. Like organizations that are that old, there have been a lot of different changes to the Y over time. And, different emphasis has been placed on program or infrastructure over time. The thing that has been consistent and that has led to this longevity is the adaptability, I guess, of the organization and the mission to not just develop healthy minds, bodies, and spirits at the individual level, but to really address community needs along the way. The first groups that you're talking about, the Young Men Christian Association that were formed in Boston in the 1860s, were organizations really put in place to help young men who were moving from an agrarian, rural parts of the U.S. to urban centers and help them survive in a kind of a post-industrial revolution urban area. That was a community need that was being addressed. And as we look at maps of obesity or diabetes around the country these days, as we in the Y talk to our members or to family members who come through the doors for swim lessons, it's very hard not to be pulled into the conversation about these chronic disease epidemics. And we recognize that YMCAs around the country have a tremendous opportunity to impact the lifestyles and the behaviors of the 22 million people that come through our doors every day.
Wow. Okay. So, clearly you are in place to be a change agent. Give us the scope of the problem. I think, we hear a lot of statistics about childhood obesity and the prevalence of diabetes. So why is this the problem that you want to tackle head on?
Yeah, so, childhood obesity gets the 4-inch headlines above the fold every time a new study comes out, and that's really important. It's where our emphasis needs to be when we think about how to get ahead of these chronic disease epidemics that are sweeping our country. There are about 17% of U.S. kids, adolescents and kids these days, meet the clinical definition of obesity. But the problem is not just that kids are overweight or obese. In and of itself, that might not on a moment-to-moment basis be the thing that worries us the most. The thing that worries us the most is that diabetes and other chronic conditions follow obesity like night follows day. And whether it's arthritis, diabetes, depression, certain forms of cancer, liver disease, you name it, every organ system in the body is affected by these chronic diseases and by obesity and unhealthy behaviors. And while we get concerned, obviously, about 17% of our childhood population being obese, what keeps me awake at night is that, we have basically a third of our adult population on the brink of being diagnosed with diabetes. 79 million American adults have something called prediabetes, and only about 9% of them have ever been told by their physician that that's the category of health that they find themselves in.
So it's one of those tip of the iceberg phenomena where we only are seeing what's above the surface. There's a huge looming iceberg underwater, as it were, ready to sink the ship of state, the U.S. economy being like the Titanic headed irrevocably for shipwreck if we don't address this.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Ron. Right now, kids in America born today, on average, they suggest that 1 out of 3 will be diabetic in their lifetime. And 1 out of 2 kids who are born to African American or Latino households are expected to be diabetic in their lifetime. And right now, currently, about 40% of all healthcare dollars are consumed by the treatment of either diabetes or its related conditions in people who have diabetes. So as we see this epidemic growing, it's very true what you say, that when we want to know where our salaries for police officers are going or teachers or et cetera, it's more and more going to the care of chronic illness. And we must get ahead of these epidemics if we are going to even have choices about where we spend our resources nationally.
And there's been a real switch in the demographics because, we talk about hunger in America, malnutrition in America, and that was really a theme, in the war on poverty. But what we're now seeing is that poor inner city, often minority populations, the disadvantaged, are more susceptible to overweight and prediabetes for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, we talk about those reasons as often the social determinants of health. It's in many cases the same problem that we would see with the kind of 70s and 80s responses to hunger and malnourishment that is now leading us to have to address obesity and chronic illness. Kids and families who live in communities where food access is a problem, where they don't know where they're going to get 5 fruits and vegetables if the doctor tells them to put 5 fruits and vegetables on the plate every day. those are precisely the kids that were in families and communities that were at risk for hunger a generation
ago. I see a problem sometimes even when I go through the checkout lane in a supermarket. Sometimes if I go and I get an exotic vegetable like a rutabaga or a parsnip, the kid who's checking me out in the checkout lane, and this is both in, the lily white suburbs as well as in the inner city, the kid looks at it and then holds it up and says, "Price check," because they don't know what it even is.
it's a matter of education, it's a matter of opportunity, and not just on the healthy eating side of the calorie equation. It's also on the physical activity side. Parents report often that they're concerned about letting their kids be free-range kids.
Right.
And
safety
having,
issues.
Having run of the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
So concerns of safety are keeping kids indoors. And when they're indoors, they're typically sedentary. And when they're sedentary, they're also typically getting advertising messages that prompt them to snack on maybe the least healthful things in the house, and it ends up being a vicious cycle. So it's something that we all can actually do something about, lots of little somethings. But if we don't make it a priority, that is, leading healthier lives and helping others to do so, our choices for how we allocate our resources around the country are going to become fewer and fewer.
Well, you've obviously studied this problem as someone trained in pediatrics, that's your branch of medicine, and also with a master's degree in public health, obviously you've given this a lot of thought. So what are the kinds of interventions that can actually make a difference? And is this just theory, or has it been demonstrated that these interventions really pack a punch?
Yeah, so just a correction. It can be very confusing. I'm on adjunct faculty status in the Department of Pediatrics at Northwestern, but I was actually trained in internal medicine.
Oh, okay.
I just happened to be in a different department at Northwestern.
Okay.
The evidence says that these community-level interventions are the most cost-effective, the most cost-efficient, like vaccination. We can, sometimes at, cents per day help prevent illness for a lifetime. So changing the environments, getting involved in advocacy to get, more sidewalks and better access to healthy foods through healthy childcare policies or just getting farmers markets into our communities. There's a lot of great work in New York City going on, with Green City Markets and a variety of things that the New York City Health Department has been involved in for a long time that has put New York City kind of on the tip of the spear for these community interventions. But what's also really fantastic is now there are also these interventions, these programs that have been tested and retested and have so much data behind them that show their effectiveness that it's no longer just a talking heads game. We don't have to talk about, making long-term change. We can give people tools to make short-term change. And the YMCA's Diabetes Prevention Program is one of those tools.
And there are actually scientific studies that substantiate the benefits and show that these interventions are actually in some ways more potent than some of the diabetes medications. So diabetes medications, they can often help to lower blood sugar, but often they don't allow people to really dramatically lower their risk ultimately to develop heart disease, to develop cancer, all these diseases that ensue from blood sugar problems.
Yeah, the story of the YMCA's Diabetes Prevention Program begins in a study just like that. Back in the 90s, early 90s, late 80s, pathologists were finding that at the time that people were diagnosed with diabetes, they already had signs of end organ damage. Whether it was damaged retinas or kidneys or nerve endings, et cetera. And so the medical community really wanted to know, well, if we caught it earlier, would that help? And so,
In other words, a revolutionary idea. Instead of waiting for the disease to occur and then treating it very aggressively, maybe we can get in there early and we can, do a little prognostication, who's at risk, and get them before it's too late.
Yeah, and some genius came up with the name prediabetes.
Right.
To kind of indicate that, this was a progression from unhealthy behaviors to obesity to prediabetes to diabetes. And the next question that scientists asked were, well, does it make any difference? Could we design an experiment where people with prediabetes actually were prevented from becoming diabetic? And in one of the largest studies really of its kind, approximately $285 million worth of research went into this program. The NIH tested in more than 20 cities an intervention called the Diabetes Prevention Program, and they tested it against the best drugs that we have on the market for maintaining good blood glucose, blood sugar levels. And the NIH actually had to stop the study early for ethical reasons because the outcomes were so compelling that this lifestyle intervention was reducing the number of people getting diabetes by so much more than just drug therapy alone that it was unethical to continue the study.
Okay.
So that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine back in 2002. And it wasn't really until 2005 that the why got involved. But between those years, there were people who were aware of the results but couldn't figure out how it could be really scaled because the intervention was still seen as being pretty expensive. So the why in Indianapolis and Indiana University partnered in the School of Medicine to translate that intervention that had been tested by the NIH. And when the Y ran it, they got just as good of results, in fact, a little bit better, and did it at a quarter of the cost.
By the way, I believe one of the drugs that this intervention was compared to was a popular drug called metformin, sometimes referred to as glucophage, which is one of the traditional drugs pretty effective for lowering blood sugar.
That's right, and it's most commonly given in people who have diabetes. So thinking about giving it to people with prediabetes was logical, because we know what the body's response is to that drug. But, this intervention, this YMCA's Diabetes Prevention Program, is not for everybody. It's not for people who are diabetic, and it's also not for people who are healthy or who just want to lose weight for New Year's Eve.
Right.
This is for people who are literally on the tipping point of becoming diabetic and helping them reverse the course of that disease's progression.
So how, if we have listeners out there who, they're concerned that they might be pre-diabetic or they have loved ones who they're concerned about, how would they find out if they're eligible for this type of program?
Yeah, I'll give you just the basics, and then I'll give you just two or three ideas of how they could figure it out. The basic criteria are that if you are an adult over 18 years of age and you are overweight, meaning that your body mass index is more than 25, chances are, if you don't already have diabetes, that you may be eligible for this program. And the best way to find out is to take a very quick, 90-second paper-pencil test. You can find it at www.ymca.net/diabetes. Or it's, the same test that, the American Diabetes Association or the CDC would have on their websites. And if the risk test tells you that you are possibly pre-diabetic or at risk for diabetes, you should follow up with your primary care doctor, your primary care provider, and double check. Maybe there's something else going on. But the vast majority of people who are going to be eligible for this program, can either come to the Y with that paper pencil test or with a doctor's note and figure out for sure that they are eligible. And there's also a 1-800 number. You can basically register for this thing in a number of ways, but ymca.net/diabetes will direct you to locations around the country where the program is up and running. We unfortunately don't have the program running in every community around the country yet. We're only in about 104 cities contracted to run the program. Another 38 or so will be coming on board in the next few months. We've been scaling this as fast as we could. We're not yet to all communities. So it's important to go to that website to see if your community is one. And if not, there are still other program providers out there who could deliver the program in your community.
Well, I know for a fact that the program is being offered in many parts of New York City, and that's a heavy listenership area for the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. So it's certainly available at the Vanderbilt YMCA, of which I'm a part, which is located in Midtown Manhattan.
Absolutely. All throughout New York City area, the New York City Metropolitan YMCA is delivering the program all over the place. And so calling up your local Y and getting information is also possible. That website I was directing people to, www.ymca.net/diabetes, is to the National YMCA's website. But there are certainly local folks and phone numbers in your phone book there to get in touch with the Y in New York City.
Are doctors making referrals? Because I know sometimes it's hard to get through to doctors. You know, they don't even realize that there's this great resource. They tell patients, you know, often patients complain to me. They come to me and they say, well, my doctor said to lose weight. My doctor said to eat a low-fat diet. My doctor said to exercise, but they didn't give me guidelines or any specific direction or structure on how to do it.
Yes. The answer is yes. Doctors are referring to this program. In fact, we have a national partnership with the American Medical Association, and they believe so strongly in the evidence that they entered into this national strategic partnership with the Y to help get people into the program through primary care provider referrals. And we are piloting around the country a number of ways that we hope that will end up working. Unfortunately, though, Dr. Hoffman, you're exactly right. When we go to medical school, we up until recently, weren't taught enough about perhaps nutrition and physical activity and how these health behaviors can really impact our lives. It's surprising but true. And so doctors are often feeling, unarmed when it comes to solutions. They also don't see reimbursement or coding available for counseling on some of these things. So they don't exactly know what to do often. And that's why I think we find that, roughly 10% of the 79 million Americans with prediabetes are actually diagnosed. Too frequently, people with prediabetes who were told by the doctor that they have it report that when they heard the news, they or their doctors, thought, awesome, I don't have diabetes. This is good news. Unfortunately, it should really be the teachable moment. It should be, look, you are on a path right now to becoming diabetic. You have a 10% chance of becoming diabetic in the next year unless you do something about it. And that's not the messages that people are hearing in clinic around the country.
You know, one of the criteria we use to define diabetes is a test called the hemoglobin A1C, with which you're very familiar. Is there a cutoff point where they say to you, "This, you're too late for the YDPP program. You've crossed the threshold into full-blown diabetes. The program is not for you."
Yes. So, if you actually the American Diabetes Association, the CDC, AMA, all kinds of medical organizations have codes and definitions for what the actual diagnosis cutoff is for diabetes. And that's the distinction. If you have diabetes, you will not be eligible for this intervention. There are other programs like diabetes self-management programs and et cetera that might be better for you. The range of A1C values that are acceptable for this program they sound kind of small, but there's actually three different types of tests. There's fasting glucose blood tests. The glucose tolerance test, as well as A1C, that can give you a range of scores that would let you into this program.
Okay. So, for somebody who has a hemoglobin A1C, let's pick a real, wild number of 7.5. They've got full-blown diabetes. They're past the point where they might be eligible.
Yeah. If your doctor diagnoses you with diabetes, that's the point at which you won't be eligible for this program.
Okay.
7.5 is definitely a level at which, your doctor would recommend, diabetes self-management or something different.
I see what you're doing here. I mean, why should not be in the business of diagnosing? It should be, cooperating with the medical profession to make these calls. But, there are some criteria for being involved in the program. Once you become eligible for the program, and presumably, you've been referred by your doctor or you're self-referred, you're hooked up with a Y, how does the program work?
Yeah, so the program is the exact same intervention that was tested back in that NIH study. And it is a year-long program, but it begins with just one class at a time. These classes are basically an hour long, and they meet wherever people will show up. The classes are delivered in a classroom setting. The program is delivered in a classroom setting. There's no lifting weights. There's no sweating going on here. It is literally people.
It's not like the Biggest Loser. That's not what you're going to get.
Yeah, no, it's not like that at all.
Okay.
It is more of people really coming to understand what it is that leads them to living unhealthy behaviors and working as groups to identify triggers to unhealthy behaviors and then changing the behaviors. But the program is delivered in 16 weekly sessions, and the goal is to help every participant lose an average of 5 to 7% of their weight. It doesn't sound like much, and truthfully, we can do it. Losing 5% to 7% of your body weight is what triggers a very amazing amount of reduction of risk for diabetes.
So like a 200-pounder would lose maybe 15 pounds or 20 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. It would be 5% would be 10 pounds, right?
10 pounds.
10 to 15 pounds.
Okay, right, even better, yep. Mm-hmm.
And that weight loss has been shown to reduce the risk of diabetes diagnosis by 58%.
Wow.
And in an older population, it reduces the risk of a new case of diabetes diagnosis by up to 71%. Older participants actually do better.
What's interesting, I had a patient who came in and he's overweight, and we were talking for a while, and he says to me, "My goal is to lose 40 pounds." And I looked at him and I just said, "Look, you may eventually get there, but," I said, creating such an unrealistic goal for yourself, you're going to be in a state of constant frustration." I said, "Why don't you select a goal that's a more modest goal? Why don't you select a goal of losing, two or three pounds every 3 months over the course of a year or a year and a half for a total of, 10 to 15 pounds? It'll do you world of good. Now, you may not be, ready to jump into a 32-inch waist Speedo suit, and pose for the Mr. America contest, but you'll be a lot healthier for it."
Yeah, measurably healthier. Just 5% weight loss is something that a lot of folks might even achieve in their kind of normal January cycle of making a New Year's resolution and losing 5% of their weight or something. But what this program does is really help people look at that kind of weight loss not as the result of a diet, but as the result of lifestyle change.
Uh-huh.
So learning how to read labels, learning how to identify the triggers that you see in advertisements, learning how to reduce fat grams in your diet, learning how to increase your physical activity at a very reasonable pace to ultimately get to a goal, 150 minutes per week of physical activity. That can be a year-long process, but this lifestyle change program has just been so effective. Again, the science had to stop because it was so effective that it wasn't ethical to continue exploring it as a scientific question. We now have 27 different health plans actually reimbursing WISE for the delivery of this program because they've seen the data and they know how important it is It's not like some grant that an insurance company is giving to WISE. They're actually reimbursing WISE just like they reimburse healthcare providers for the successful treatment of a condition, in this case, prediabetes.
Yeah, and clearly they can see that it's going to save them a lot of money in terms of payouts for expensive care.
Yep.
So in these classroom settings, have you compiled statistics on, you know, not everybody takes the bait and goes with the program, but do you find that a preponderance of people get with the program, they're consistent? What are some of the statistics that you're getting?
Yeah, we've had over 14,000 individuals get into the program in just the last 3 years. The hardest part is for people to find their way to the program. In many cases, we are just launching the program this year, or, doctors haven't been diagnosing. And again, you can find the information on www.ymca.net/diabetes to figure out, where in your community it might be offered. But when people show up, they stay. The Y has a 170-year-long tradition of working with groups of individuals in very comfortable settings and in ways that help everyone succeed. You can think of, your swim lessons or your team sports that the kids go to, or camps, or, back in the old days, whether it was Bible study or basketball teams, whatever. There's been a lot of examples where WISE are expert in helping groups form and address their needs as a group. And that's the case with this program as well. So the individuals, once they come, they stay. CDC recognizes program success as a definition is when people have attended 9 out of 16 of these core sessions. And at the YMCA, we're averaging about 12.5 out of 16 core sessions attended. We have a project right now in New York City for people who have Medicare plans that cover this program as a trial run. And for those individuals who show up, we're averaging 13.5 out of 16 sessions attended. And again, the CDC says only 9 are success. So we're, basically breaking the benchmarks by, 1.5 times what success is once people show up.
That's very impressive. What I'm a little concerned about is the criteria for admission to this, because you say that you have to be 18 years of age to enter this program. Is that the case?
That is true. This program is for adult pre-diabetic individuals.
Okay. And it's a little harder sometimes to make the cut with kids, because we get into this issue of, are you going to send the kid home with a fat letter and then stigmatize the kid and refer them to a program to, quote, rehabilitate them. But is it contemplated that this kind of program will be extended to younger kids? I mean, I know that just by being at the Y, a lot of the kids are getting, better ideas about diet. A lot of kids are getting in exercise programs and turning their lives around.
Yeah, it sounds crazy, but, the science hasn't quite been there yet for kids. Kids grow in and out of different weights and weight classes, especially when they're young. By the time they're teens, they've pretty much established their risk profile for adulthood. Kids who are overweight or obese in their teens, about 80% of them are going to be overweight or obese adults. But the science hasn't been done yet on how this intervention or something like it could lead to long-term improvements in health. There are some similar programs or studies that have been going on in the UK, and there are some trials underway in the US. About 20 different studies have been done that have now led the United States Preventive Services Task Force to identify weight screening and counseling is something that's indicated, but there isn't yet a national program that we can be sending kids to for this kind of behavior coaching.
Right. Nonetheless, I'm a big supporter of the WISE Strong Kids program, And it's actually my favorite philanthropy. I feel that the Y has done a lot for me, and I'd like to give back. And I encourage people to go to my Facebook page, where I'll post what is called my Y Champions page, which tells you a little bit about the Strong Kids campaign. And also, it's a page where I try to elicit small contributions to the Strong Kids campaign. When I know that the Strong Kids campaign isn't particularly your forte, Matt, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about it. From what I can see, it's a great way for kids to go to camp, participate in urban camps, and also in you know, get out into the country to camps, and really develop social skills and often leadership skills, develop athletic skills that will, you know, change the course of their lives and make a big difference. Ultimately, may have an impact on whether they become overweight and diabetic.
Yeah, you know, my hat's off to the Y staff in New York City. You know, running a lot of innovative programs for kids. You know, and not just funded by the Strong Kids campaign, but through membership. As people join the Y, you know, and take advantage of the facilities and programs that work for them, they are also supporting an infrastructure that helps many people get sliding scale scholarships into these programs, whether it's swim lessons or camping or you know, any of the innovative work that's going on in the New York City Y or elsewhere. You're exactly right when you mentioned before that, you know, youth sports and et cetera are a great way to get kids physically active every day. You know, whether the science has produced an intervention that is going to be the best one for the, you know, maybe most overweight kids or not, what we want everybody to remember is that, you know, an hour a day of physical activity is really what keeps the doctor away. And whether that's by walking the dog in the morning or walking to school or taking a walk with your family after dinner, you know, there's throwing a ball in the yard, whatever it is, there are so many ways that we could be more active every day. It just has to add up to about an hour a day, and it doesn't have to be high intensity, but that's a great thing the Y can help families do, is find ways to be physically active every day.
So give us, in conclusion, the call to action. You know, where can people get information about these programs?
Yeah, you know, your local YMCA is the best place to check in with in terms of program offerings. The Ys around the country are actually all independent 501c3s. They all have their own boards, just like the one that Dr. Hoffman sits on at the Vanderbilt Y in New York City. The program offerings differ by community. So depending on where you're listening from today, you should just check out with your local Y what program offerings there are. And if you're interested in knowing more about the YMCA's diabetes prevention program, you can go to www.ymca.net/diabetes.
Okay. Well, look, congratulations on being involved in such a worthwhile program. I mean, frankly, you know, the government is trying to reform our healthcare system, the results, you know, remain to be seen. It's a ponderous process sometimes when a federal bureaucracy tries to intervene on behalf of the citizenry. But local action, community-based action, action that's based on volunteerism and philanthropy, could really make a dent in this current epidemic that threatens the health and well-being and, you know, financial security and even the national security of America as more and more people become sick and sedentary and succumb to metabolic syndrome and diabetes. So I congratulate you on your great work, Dr. Matt Longjohn from the Y Diabetes Prevention Program. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thanks for your volunteerism in your local Y.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.